What's up, everybody? It's Brad Sinowski here, back with another episode of a podcast at AOL Print Shop. My next guest is my good friend Brandon Arthur, also known as DJ Hustle Simmons. You may have heard him on Jammin 94.5 and also Hut 96.9. We get into how he started with that industry, being on the radio back in his days in South Carolina and Georgia, and what led him back to Boston. He is now working at as an administrator at South Boston High School, giving back to the community that has given him so much. And very inspirational dude, very positive dude, positive influence on the community. And I think it's just refreshing to hear, especially now with what everyone's going through. Shout out to all the nurses, doctors, medical workers, emergency employees that are out there fighting the good fight. Hope everyone's staying healthy. Hope everyone's coping. Hope everyone's staying positive. I figured I'd drop this episode. Help me get a little bit off my chest. Hopefully you can relate to it. Hope you enjoy episode 6, DJ Hustle Simmons. Peace. Yo, thanks for joining me. This is the first time I've actually hopped on this podcast or had a guest since I got back from Hawaii. But, you know, a lot has happened since then. And I'm interested to hear how you, you know, first of all, with you and your family. I hope everything's, you know, you're safe and healthy. But second of all, I want to hear what the deal is with South Boston High School and what you're doing over there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. First of all, what's up, everybody? It's your man, Hustle Simmons. You can get at me on social media at DJ Hustle Simmons, spelt the regular way, real simple. But over at South Boston High, when we're in school, I'm a manager of student life, athletic coordinator, and I coach the girls' softball team. So obviously, we are not in school right now. So school basically consists, work-wise, for me, it's a bunch of Zoom calls during the week with the administration, Zoom calls during the week with the staff. Fridays, we do a cool thing, which is we've created a virtual student lounge for the kids to log into. And we have like a meeting in the ladies' room. We have a barber shop. Our secretary is talking about Harry Potter. So we have a little something to offer the kids on Fridays at 12. During the week, the kids have about 4 classes. They have 1 or 2 classes a day, which is done virtually over Zoom as well. Today, I actually sat in on 3 classes and participated just like I was a student. And it really reminds me why I haven't gotten my master's degree. School's not for me.
I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you. You know? I think for me, it's the same thing, you know. I'm in higher ed. You're in education too, but
yeah,
we've been doing everything virtually through Zoom. You know, the MBA programs have all gone online through Zoom. It's been a big adjustment. I'm sure it has for your kids too as well. But I just want for me, this brings me back to, I don't know if you remember what happened with Flint, Michigan, and the water crisis up there.
Oh yes, real sad, real sad.
It's like one of those things, but it's, people didn't like that, didn't get obviously the news and the attention. You know, it wasn't a worldwide thing, but I can imagine how they feel now. And it's sad that we have to have something happen like this to understand, like, hey, people like this, people go through this every day, not just, you know, things that happen with water and that sort of thing, but I think worldwide, people in other countries. This kind of is an eye opener for me, big time. And I think a lot of people are going to look back at this and be like, dude, what the fuck was going on? You know,
this is the ultimate equalizer, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody in the entire world, basically, we're all on the same playing field, which is kind of crazy when you think about it like that. And, Yeah, I mean, I'm just a little disappointed on the way it was presented to us when it first started bubbling. You know, depending on who you listen to, the government found out a long time ago and didn't do anything about it. But I think one of the reasons it's so high right now, as far as the number of cases of people that have the COVID-19, is I know for me, it seemed like the only people in the beginning that were at risk were the elderly, people with pre-existing conditions, and then some of the young kids that might have a weak immune system. So I think a lot of the millennials didn't feel that it applied to them. And now, after seeing some of the stats, you know, the highest number of cases are the millennials.
Right. And you mentioned how it came out. You really didn't know who to believe, because
exactly,
you had all these different people saying, you know, it doesn't affect the young people. It only has people with underlying. It's one of those things you wish there was some sort of media outlet that was kind of universal, that people could go to get specific true information, other than all these other media outlets saying, oh, you know, we'll put this out there because people, you know, we may not think it's 100% backed, but we'll put it out there because what's going on. So I agree.
Lord knows you can't listen to number 45.
Yeah, that too.
He's all over the place. Now, the one dude I do believe is when 45 has his press conferences, that the doctor, I forget his name, but the little guy with the glasses, he's always speaking the truth.
Yeah, he's been around for a while. He's done some stuff with HIV, and you know, he's a big dog there.
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel exactly. It's one of, I don't want to touch on this too much and want to like kind of keep this thing positive and whatnot, but I feel like
it's reality right now.
It's hard not to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you put it this way: if we weren't in this situation, we'd probably be doing this podcast face to face instead of over technology.
Exactly. That's the name of the podcast. It's a podcast at AOL Print Shop, but I guess people, you know, obviously we're not there and we're not face to face, but we got to do what we got to do. We got to keep moving.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I feel for the kids, you know, especially like seniors, they're going to miss their prom. They're going to miss their, you know, I don't think graduation's going to happen. You know, any seniors are missing spring sports. So, right. I mean, think about having your senior year of high school basically taken away from you. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's like, who knows what the kids will think when they look back on this, you know? It's one of those things. Hopefully they obviously can't make up a sports season, but hopefully they can do something for graduation, because that's a big deal, I think.
Yeah, that's a huge step, especially for, you know, I'm at South Boston High, a public school in the city. So, you know, graduation, a lot of these kids could be the first one in the family graduating, which is, you know, a huge milestone and something to be very proud of.
Exactly.
And I'm sure they're, you know, to me, graduation, yearbook, all that stuff is really for the family. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's the message I relay to the kids when some kids are struggling senior year and, oh, I want to drop out, or no, I'm not going to take a picture for the yearbook. My messaging to them is always think about your family. You know, your mom, dad, your grandmother, whoever you live with wants that yearbook on the table so she can tell everybody how proud of he or she they are.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, the good thing is, and another thing, you know, a lot of these kids are struggling. You know, we're about an 80% low income school. So we provide free breakfast and free lunch. And, you know, a lot of the parents and guardians of the kids that go to the school that I'm involved with, you know, work jobs where they might not be able to work now.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? And a lot of these people are waiting on unemployment. I mean, it's insane how many people in Massachusetts have applied for unemployment, but it's expected with the current situation. Right. But I have friends that, you know, might have hit a wrong button when they put their application in for unemployment, And it's like 3 weeks later and they still haven't gotten a word back. They're trying to call in. But the good thing, I mean, you know, in the city of Boston, so shout out to Mayor Walsh and Boston Public Schools. We have about over 50 locations where families can come get breakfast and lunch for themselves and the entire family. They just take it to go. So it's from about 8:30 to 11:30. There's a school around the corner from where I live at. They're doing about 500 meals a day.
That's great. You bring up a good point because you don't realize that some of these kids, well, most of your kids, you know, at that high school are dependent upon, you know, the lunch program, and that's how most of them eat.
Exactly.
It's something little, but it's something that's big at the same time, because especially with the unemployment going on, you have families that already aren't making enough money. This bailout can't come soon enough. But who knows? That's just it's just a penny in the barrel. So to
exactly.
speak. I don't know how long that's going to last.
Yep. The stimulus check might not even cover rent for most people.
Right.
You know,
it really is a sad situation, but I want to try to turn the page a little bit. And I want to talk about,
let's do it.
I want to talk about you, man. I think you have an interesting story, and I'll just give a little people a backstory about how we met. You know, you reached out to me, to do some stuff for South Boston High School.
Yeah.
The spirit wear type deal, the hoodies. You came up with all the designs, and, you know, we put out some dope stuff for the kids, and
definitely.
I always enjoy doing that. And I look at you, I think you're pretty, I admire you because you try to affect your kids in a positive way. Mm-hmm. That's why you're doing what you do. But you're putting out all those quotes on IG and everything like that. I think that's, you know, they need a role model. And, you know, not whether or not you want to be that role model,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're in that position. And I admire you for just taking the lead on that and, like, just going with it.
Well, thank you, sir.
What kind of led you to that direction?
You want me to take it back all the way from the beginning, like a little history of myself?
Take it back to Myrtle Beach, man.
All right, so we'll take it even before there. So,
okay.
You know, I grew up in Brookline, you know, went through the Brookline public school system, graduated from Brookline High School, and I ended up going to college in Charleston, South Carolina on a baseball scholarship to the College of Charleston. While I was in college, I'm probably like every other college student and have no idea what I want to do. So I was just a communications major. What was sort of written communications. I never had an aspiration to be on the radio or to be a DJ or anything like that. But music was something that I always loved, and I favored the hip hop music growing up, and was glad that I grew up in the era I did. So I've been able to experience a lot of different styles of hip hop, basically there since the beginning of it. So while I was in school, I was basically the only kid on the team that listened to hip hop. You know, it was a down south school. Majority of the kids were from down south. You know, we had one African American on the baseball team. You know, your traditional, if people picture down south, what it is, that's basically what it was. And one day a new radio station popped on the dial down in Charleston, and I was getting stretched out by the trainer, and she was like, "Hey, did you hear this new radio station? About this new radio station?" So I was like, "No." And ultimately at that point, I wanted to be a record promoter and work for a record company. So I was like, the best way to do that would be to do an internship at a radio station, and I can meet all the record reps. Once again, no intention on being on the radio at all. So I went to the radio station directly after practice that day in my baseball uniform. Because the practice field we didn't have a locker room out there. It was about 5 miles away from the school. And, they looked at me kind of crazy because it was an African-American owned radio station. And, you know, everybody that worked there or did anything involved with the radio station was African-American. And here comes this white kid from Boston, you know, to the hip hop station. But Luckily enough, Jay Jackson gave me an opportunity to be an intern at the radio station. And, you know, one thing led to another. I learned how to do all the stuff you needed to do. You know, in radio stations, we have what's called a board. That's like the master control with the levels and what shoots out the music. So one day I got a phone call that someone called in sick. It was Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they needed me to fill in for an hour. So that was my first time being on the radio. And that was my junior year in college. I started my internship junior year in college. And then when I went to my senior year, I picked up a full-time shift. So I was full-time radio, full-time school, full-time baseball. And the shift I was working were midnights till six. So I would, you know, work from midnight till six in the morning. Then I'd go to school, baseball practice, take a nap, and then just do it all over every day except the weekends.
That's the definition of a grind right there.
Yeah. Sure. So my original DJ name was Corey Hill because I grew up on Corey Hill in Brookline. And because I was such a go-getter and I was at all the events, no matter where they were in the country, I was always there. Someone gave me the nickname of Hustle Simmons, and it kind of just stuck. In 2000, so I did radio in Charleston, South Carolina. Then I did radio in Augusta, Georgia. Then I did radio back in Charleston, South Carolina. And I also picked up a station in Myrtle Beach. And then I moved back to Boston in 01. My boy G-Spin, who grew up in Brookline as well, and we were childhood friends, was able to get me an interview at Jammin' 94.5 in Boston. So I came up one weekend to do an on-air interview. So I did a Saturday shift and a Sunday shift. And I was driving back to South Carolina, which is a 14-hour ride. And I got a phone call from the station saying they wanted to offer me a job. So legitimately, I got home on that Monday and just started packing whatever I needed. You know what I mean? Basically,
yeah.
I took whatever I was starting the next weekend. So I got the job on Monday and I said, I'll be back Saturday for a shift. And so I packed up anything I needed to make money with. You know what I'm saying? So I packed up all my records. I packed up my turntables, my speakers, everything, and just put everything in a trailer and drove back. Luckily enough, I had a friend in South Carolina that was going to rent out my house, because at that time I had purchased my first house as a junior in college just because it was so cheap. I mean, I paid 80 grand for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. My monthly, my mortgage was $325 a month.
Wow. You still have that house?
No, I do not have that house anymore, unfortunately. I wish, I keep kicking myself.
I was going to say, man, that's a gold mine right now.
Yeah, great little vacation spot. So I came up to Boston in 01. I was on Jammin' 94.5 from 01 till about 2013. At that point, I took a job over at Hot 96.9, because it was a lot of the people that came over from Jammin'. I worked Hot 96.9 from 2013 till 2018. And then what happened was in 2015, well, actually 2014, I wanted to start working with kids. It had always been a goal of mine to work with kids because, you know, I grew up like most kids in Boston grew up sort of, I was a knucklehead. You know what I mean? Failing classes, not doing this, not doing that. You know, my junior year in high school, I wasn't able to play hockey because of my English. I failed English. So school was kind of rough, and it took a couple people to knock on my head enough times at the school and was able to, Mr. Coates was, a guy in high school that really helped me, you know, get on path and get into college and stuff like that. So 2014, I decided like I wanted to work with the kids. And more importantly, because I had been so successful on the radio in Boston for 15 plus years, I felt it was my obligation to give back to the city. And I thought the best way I could give back to the city is work with the kids. So the first job I had working with kids was at the Home for Little Wanderers. And I worked out at a facility they had called Longview Farm, which is in Walpole, which is a residential school for kids with emotional impairments and, you know, behavior issues and stuff like that. So I worked there for about 3 months. And it was kind of a tough job because a lot of the kids had some pretty severe behavioral disabilities. And, you know, unfortunately, we had to restrain kids. And that wasn't really something that I enjoyed doing. So in that company, like most companies, you got to work 90 days before you can apply for a new job within the company. And that 90 days hit, and I ended up moving within the company to a facility in Brighton, the Children's Collaborative. And there I was a vocational coordinator and an outreach worker, which was a lot better. It was a lot more fun. You know, we didn't have to restrain any kids like that. And my first job, which I didn't even know, the first job for the Home for Little Wanderers, I had a guy named Kevin Sibley, who was my boss, who come to find out his wife was the headmaster at South Boston High School.
That's the connection.
So how I got into the school system, it was just really, it was, you know, sort of lucky. I've my whole life, I've never really had a super game plan. I've kind of just gone with the flow. And fortunately enough, it's, you know, the majority of the time it's worked out in my favor. So I asked him if I could meet with his wife, not to try to get a job. I just really wanted to bring to her what my life experiences have been, what my professional career has looked like. And if I'm trying to get a job in BPS, what type of jobs am I looking for on the website where they post the jobs? I had no idea what my credentials or my life experiences, you know, what job I would be applying for. It's a whole different, you know, whole different situation. So I didn't know, like, some of the titles, what that person actually did or this person actually did. So in 2015, I took a job as a cluster sub, which basically means I was like the building substitute. Whenever a teacher was out, I would be subbing classes, you know, paid about maybe $32,000 a year. You know, didn't get paid for snow days, didn't get paid for spring break or anything like that. But, you know, living up to the Hustle Simmons name, I've always been someone that I just need to get in the building. Once I get in the building, I feel like I could, I could excel, just because, you know, being an athlete, you know, what it takes to be an athlete with dedication, with hard work, with not giving up, you know, blasting down closed doors. I take that athletic philosophy and apply it to my life. So both my personal and my professional career.
I hear you, man. I'm the same way. Same way. I always rate the sports, and we've talked about it in a few previous episodes. You know, I had my boy from Northeast, Matt Marzio, on. Mm-hmm. He was fortunate enough to get a chance to shot a play pro ball with Kansas City. But it's a big deal, and I think that's, you know, that probably led into why you're so involved in that sports program too, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoy it. I mean, you know, I coached the softball team at the school. I don't know if I said it earlier, but, you know, I do the manager of student life, which is a support staff role. It's part of the administration, and I coach the softball team, which is kind of interesting because you would think at the high school level, anyone coming to try out for softball has played the game before. But when I took over the softball program, there was not one girl on the team that ever played before high school. Like, every girl had zero experience, didn't know what the game was, didn't know the rules, didn't know how to throw, hit, and catch. So it was actually fun for me because, you know, I like to see smiles. I like to provide smiles for people. That's one of the things I really enjoyed on the radio, was being there every day for people to hopefully turn their day around if it wasn't going too well. And, so coaching the girls, when, you know, most of the girls were scared of the ball and everything like that, but, you know, after a practice or two, you can at least get the girl hitting the ball, throwing it, and catching. So when you go from thinking you can't do something to being able to do it, the joy it brought the young ladies was phenomenal. You know what I mean? And I just want to bring some of my life experiences to them. And, you know, the role I play as a coach is actually really a backseat to what I really do with the softball program. You know, I'm a brother, I'm an uncle, I'm a father. I'm a friend. I'm whatever the girls need. I just want to be a positive male role model in their lives, and you know, teach everybody what it's like to be on a team. And the slogan for my program is "Family isn't always blood." And it, once again, without anyone playing organized sports growing up, you know, not only do I have to teach the game, the rules, the actual activity of the game, I got to teach them what it's like to be on a team. That's the biggest challenge, to be honest with you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Be on a team, you know, work well under pressure, you know, build confidence, all those things. And, you know, the fact that you, I'll tell you, it's like, I can possibly relate to that. It's obviously a lot different. I coached at a college level.
Yep.
I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to coach at Babson.
Awesome.
When I was playing Northeastern, I had a, you know, I played my first 4 years. My fifth year was just school. So our pitching coach is now the head coach over there. Shout out to Matt Noon in Babson. He's running the program out there in Wellesley. Nice. Very successful program right now. But I had to learn that, you know, you're not playing anymore. You're coaching. You can't do anything about an error. You can't go out there and throw the ball or hit the ball. That was my biggest adjustment. Mm-hmm. So I commend you for, you know, taking it from scratch. You obviously have a lot of patience. I would say that I don't have as much patience as you, but
it's enjoyable, man. Like, you know, and the good thing about it was I was recognized by the other coaches my second year. So obviously my first year we won one game. We were like 1-15.
You mentioned that.
You know what I mean?
Right.
My second year we won 3 games. We were 3-13, and with that 3-13 record, I actually was named Coach of the Year for BPS.
I remember you talking to me over the phone over that. I was like, that's awesome. You know what I mean? That is awesome.
You figure the coach of the year is always going to be the team that wins the championship. But it was nice to get recognized by my colleagues and fellow coaches to see the work that I was putting in. But I was more proud because the girls were the one that gave me the opportunity to get the coach of the year. And just to fast forward real quick, this is my fifth year in the school. So last year when we did have a season was my fourth year. And we ended up making the state tournament.
That is
it's awesome.
That's like icing on the cake. Not that the, you know, it's not over for you, obviously, but that's just, I can imagine how probably great that felt, not just for you, but more importantly, the girls that you
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things, I'm always trying to open their eyes to new things. So we do a lot of team building activities. And, you know, one of the other things that makes it tough for it to be a team is, you know, I grew up in Brookline, so, you know, I went to grammar school and high school with basically the kids that I played sports with over the summer. And, you know, when high school, I played hockey and baseball. So, you know, when you got to high school in my town, you knew all the kids you played sports with. So you had already been a team for 10 or 12 years, you know. And the way Boston Public Schools is set up is you go to school wherever, you know. So it's most of these kids. They might know each other from some other neighborhood or anything like that, but it's not like the girls on the team all grew up together playing softball.
Damn, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
You could live right across.
So you could literally live
right across.
You could literally live in Mattapan, but go to South Boston High School.
Oh, at South Boston High, we have everything. We have Mattapan, West Roxbury, Roslindale, Hyde Park. You know, obviously, South Boston, Roxbury, Dorchester. You know, they're from everywhere. So, you know, some neighborhoods might not like each other, which might get in the way of a friendship between teammates. But, you know, I was able to get everyone to look past that for the softball thing. And it's just so rewarding just to see the kids and the way that they look out for me, you know, actually.
Yeah.
This year.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome, man. And
this year, I was fortunate enough to have one of my senior captains this year speak up for me to the superintendent. You know, every year they do budget cuts at the school. And in the beginning of February, I was told by my headmaster that my position was getting eliminated. So I, which was a bummer because I really like the school. I feel like I provide a lot of energy. You know, we have metal detectors in the front door, but to ease the anxiety of the metal detectors, I'm always playing music in the lobby. So it was pretty devastating when I found out my position was going to get eliminated, because not only do I work at the school, but I love being the athletic coordinator and I love being the softball coach. And what happened was this girl who was my captain actually ran into the superintendent of Boston Public Schools at a science fair. And she's the only girl in the school, the only student in the school that I told that I lost my job. And she ended up having a conversation with the superintendent, I guess, about me. And 2 weeks later, my job got reinstated. Yeah. So I emailed the superintendent.
That's a great story.
Yeah, I emailed the superintendent. And I was like, you know, I just really want to say thank you for giving me my job back. You know, I want to retire from South Boston High School because I don't want to jump around from school to school. I'd rather just stay at one school for my entire career. And her reply to me.
Yeah, you build that relationship with those kids.
Her reply to me was, don't thank me. Thank your students. They were your best advocate. After I heard a story, it touched my heart, and I felt necessary for you to get your job back.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. It's not like a – it reminds me of like a – you know, one of those movies that have, you know, the inner city kids and the coach. And
yeah.
They struggle to like get them together. That's what this reminds me of a little bit. Not that it's like a kind of tragic story.
Yep.
It's more of a happy story, but that's what reminded me.
Yeah,
of.
That made it hit home, man. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not really one to. I know I'm doing a lot of talking about myself right now, but that just sort of seems how we're doing this. I'm not really one to really talk about myself, even with the DJ thing. I never really walked around the streets like, "Hey, I'm Hustle Simmons." I'm kind of more of a chill dude. And you know, if someone in a conversation asked me what I do, I tell them, yeah, I do radio and this is the name I use. But, you know, unfortunately, working in a school system, you don't get instant gratification. You know what I'm saying? If you're, you know, with AWOL Print Shop, you guys get an order in, you print the T-shirt, you print the sweatshirt, you print the sweatsuit, whatever it may be, and you immediately get to see your finished product. And you get to hand your finished product to your client, and you get to see the joy that they have on their face because the product is, you know, anytime I've dealt with you, everything is perfection. You know what I'm saying?
Appreciate it. Try to.
No problem. Yeah. So, you know, in high school, I always tell my colleagues who get frustrated at times is, you know, we're not going to see the payoff with the work we do with these kids. Hopefully when they're 25, 30 years old and sitting down at the dining room table for Thanksgiving or something, you know, maybe they'll say, hey, you remember Mr. So-and-so, or Mr. So-and-so played a big part in my life, or Miss So-and-so played a big part in my life. So it's nice. Like, that was the only moment I've gotten to really see the impact, like, while the student was still around. You know what I mean? And she's not the most talkative one. She's really quiet. So a lot of the things I didn't ask her what she said to the superintendent, but it obviously, for to affect the superintendent like that, had to be some really good words. And, you know, obviously I mean something to this young lady far beyond what I thought I did.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the same with me with my job at BU. Is like, even though they're maybe in a different situation, mm-hmm. but I love to help people, man. I mentioned that like one of my first episodes. That's what kind of, that's a culmination of like who mm-hmm. I am, and you know, just working with people closely. And I would say on your level, it's more, not saying more gratifying, but it's more opportunity, I would say. And but not saying that's more. That's
well, I think,
by any
I think
means.
The difference is, you know, when they get to you in the secondary or, you know what I mean? In the secondary education, they've kind of like, they are who they are at that point. You know what I'm saying? There might still be some people that need some molding and some guidance, but you know, when you're getting them in high school, I mean, these are their formidable years. You know what I'm saying? It's up to me to, sometimes I'm the only person holding him or her accountable. Maybe there's no accountability at home. Maybe I'm the first one to teach him and her something about being a man or being a woman, or, you know, there's just so many things. And, you know, I obviously have realized, and well, I knew it going into the job, that, you know, what I say isn't really going to matter. It does to a certain extent, but more importantly, is the way I carry myself is what's going to matter, because they, you know, the kids are always watching. And one of the reasons I thought it'd be a good idea to get into the school system, like I said, my whole goal was to give back to the city because they had been so kind to me and continue to be kind. You know, I figure I could be that dude that the kids can relate to and the families can relate to. So I remember, you know, in my office, I have like a picture wall with like me with all the famous people and stuff. So the kids think that's cool. I DJ all the school events, whether it's pep rally, talent show, anything like that. And I'll never forget when I, one of the first suspension hearings I had to hold when a kid made a poor decision, when the family came in, the mother recognized me and like, couldn't believe I was like working at the high school. So, you know, with the years, the amount of years I've been on the radio, in Boston, a lot of the parents like grew up listening to me basically. So, It's pretty cool when a parent comes in and recognizes you. It's just, they get totally surprised. They're super surprised because everyone also thinks I'm an African American when they listen to me on the radio, but I'm actually a white
person. I was gonna mention that, but you brought it up. those must be some dope freaking dances.
Yeah, then, yeah. Huh? Well, I mean, to be honest with you, man, I don't like DJing for the kids.
you can't play with.
Just want to hear the same thing over and over. And then you know how the kids dance. Yeah. They're super sexual with their dances. So, then you got, you know, if I'm playing a song and they start dancing a little too close to each other, then I got the teachers and my boss looking at me like it's my fault.
It's on you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's every funny. Dance that with a little funny. Kid, unless it's like an actual dance, then, you know, if I'm playing some island music or something like that, it's over. But like... And then with the kids, you can't really dig deep into the catalog or into the library of music. You know what I'm saying? Just because they haven't been around for that long. Also, when you take away the alcohol for the participants of the party, it's a little different of a party as well. But, you know, I pride myself when I DJ, you know what I mean? I love to dig in the crates and play some old stuff and, you know, just rock out. I'm just a vibe type of DJ. Like, I'm not going to battle anybody. My cutting skills and all that kind of stuff, that's not really my forte. I do more blending and stuff like that because I got trained to be a DJ on the radio.
Yeah. That's cool.
But what's going on at your work?
We're in the same, kind of the same situation virtually. I mentioned it's been busy. There's, I would say, for me, I miss the face-to-face contact. We still get that with Zoom. It's obviously not the same. I feel like because of what's going on and all the stuff and all the change and all the adjustments that have been made by not just our school, but the university itself as a whole, we're just putting out fires. And it's not fun, but I always try to stay positive because – you know, we talked about it at the beginning of this podcast. It's like at the beginning of this episode, like it can always be worse. There's a lot of ton of other shit going on in the world. Even before this happened.
Now, how do the kids feel? How do the kids feel about doing the online courses? Do you have people like, hey, I'll just wait till next year? I mean, how did that work?
There's a few of those. Mostly they're adjusting. It's kind of, for me, working with a professional evening MBA, so that's our evening MBA program, they don't want to put it off any longer. So they're trying to deal with it as much as possible. They have most of them have the time now because they're not commuting to work. They're at home, so they just go straight from the work to the stay on the computer all day, which is tough. But they're not having to commute into the city to get to class. Which is one positive about it, but they're dealing with it. There's a few, you know, what's kind of isn't so much of an issue, but is kind of bad timing is that it's going to be a positive for the school that we're starting an online MBA program.
So it's a good way to pilot it.
And it's a good way to pilot it. You can look at it that way. But on the back end of things, people are starting to look at the cost.
Between other options out there?
And not just, between the two options, between the online MBA and the on-the-ground, professional evening MBA that I handle, that I work with. Those are the students that I work with. So that is creating – that's creating like a problem. It's not the biggest problem by any means that we're dealing with right now.
So online is obviously cheaper. So you're worried.
Yes.
The university is worried that people are going to choose that route as opposed to coming in live.
Yeah, that's one thing.
But don't you think the volume of students would make up the difference?
I think they're thinking two things. Because it's the first year they're offering this, they want to cap it at a certain number to make sure it gets off and running properly. The other thing is, our on the ground students are now virtual. So who's to say they shouldn't be paying the same amount, and saving all that money and because the cost, it's all about the cost difference. So long story short, it's a lot of putting out fires right now, which I don't enjoy, but it's one of those things, part of the job, and you try to get through it, make the best of it. Things at the print shop, me saying a little bit.
You're still getting clients coming through for the print shop?
It's pretty, I wouldn't say it's like steady, but it's things are happening enough to keep us afloat.
Has anyone tried to order masks through you guys, like custom masks?
Okay.
No, they haven't. But that's a good point. I mean, we could probably make that happen if people wanted.
Yeah, you'd get
that
in the long line of people trying to get some masks.
Yeah, and not that those masks. I mean, we can go the masks that. The cloth masks aren't as good as like the other masks, but you anything helps at this point.
Yeah, I mean they're saying you could use a T-shirt or whatever to tie it up with the mask.
T-shirt,
you know what I mean?
Scarf. Yeah, yeah.
I know it's tough. Yeah, I know they're tough. To any store I go into, the first thing I ask them is, "You got any masks or you got any gloves?" The answer is always no.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Toilet paper too.
No. I mean, I don't understand that one because you're still allowed to go to the stores. I'm still trying to figure out why people are stockpiling toilet paper.
No idea, man. That happened early and often too. So you're like, what are people gonna do with all the toilet paper?
And it's funny to see how different stores are handling it now. Every store that I've gone to now, everybody has one of those like plastic windows in front of them, which didn't have it, maybe 2 weeks ago. I was fortunate enough to get a homemade mask from one of my mother's friends in Vermont. So I just got that. So anytime I leave the house, man, that thing's around my neck, ready to get pulled up at any time.
Same with me, man. We had a few masks hanging around at the shop, luckily. And, I probably should have been using them more often than not, but, they're coming in handy right
Hell
now.
Oh yeah.
Sure.
My question to you, when life gets back to normal, what's going to be more crowded? The club, the barbershop, the hair salon, or the nail shop?
It's a good question. I would say people are going nuts at the club.
Yeah, probably.
To be honest.
Yeah, definitely, man. The way to look at it is basically when the quarantine is over, everybody's turning 21 for the first time.
It's going to be insane, man. It's going to be insane. And, one thing we haven't talked about is like the small businesses.
Yeah, man. I feel bad. I feel bad for them. Thank God I use my pizza shop is Pino's out in Cleveland Circle in Brighton. I don't know if anyone that's listening has ever been out there. Yeah.
Shout out to Pino's, man. It's dope.
Yeah, top notch pizza. That, one thing about Hustle Simmons, I eat pizza every single day. So I go to Pino's like every other day and pick up a pizza. Usually lasts me a couple of days. But fortunately enough, they're still gonna be able I mean, they're still open and running, which is nice. I'm just scared to see when this is over, how many of the businesses do not open back up. Even good businesses that were successful, small businesses are going to have trouble trying to get the doors open again. So it's really, really sad because it takes, as you know, with your A, your AOL, not your AOL, your AWL. You know, what it took, you know, you guys started in a small location. Now you've moved to a bigger location, which is dope. And, you know, I'm an entrepreneur as well. I have, I've had a marketing company working for record companies for, you know, quite some time, about 20 years now, really. And I know the work it takes to put in to start your own business. So, you know, and my own business has always been a secondary business. So it's nothing I've had to rely on 100%. So, I mean, I feel really, really bad for some of these mom and pop stores and restaurants that have given everything they own and all their blood, sweat, and tears into their businesses, and they might not even have an opportunity to open back up.
I second that. I'm scared. I don't see how some of these restaurants and mom and pops can open back up. I just don't see how it can happen unless all these SBA loans come through, which I don't know if. Who knows if that's gonna ever gonna happen?
Yeah, according
me, you know, the wife and I, we like to go out, we like to have a good time, we like to eat good food. You know, some of our spots that we, you know, we frequent, we're worried about, and it's selfishly saying that, you know, it's like, you know, they're exactly. dealing with something totally different. You have as a small business owner, you know, for me, I don't have a lot of employees. I maybe have one or two like really part-time employees that I work with. So they're fine. They're, you know, this is their secondary thing. This is my secondary thing too. But for those people that have, you know, their blood, sweat, tears, and life into it, it's their livelihood. But more importantly, it's sad to see because they're worried about their
exactly
more than themselves. You know what I mean? They have good intentions. They know that they feed, you know, 18 miles at a time. And they're worried about them more than themselves. And when that happens, I get emotional about it because, you know, it's just like you don't realize how lucky people
are. No, I mean, there's people listening to this podcast right now that don't know how they're paying rent, that don't know how they're getting their next meal. Don't know how they're going to pay their student loan. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just there's, and you know, of course, if you watch the TV, 45 saying there's going to be bailouts for everybody for here and there. But when it comes down to the nitty gritty, I know some of these companies that were supposed to be helping out small businesses like the banks, they're not even accepting the applications yet, or this bank's had too many applications, so they've shut it down. So it all sounds good when it's getting projected from him, but when it comes down to reality, it's not happening. You know what I mean? Even the unemployment in Massachusetts, we're up to about 275,000 that have applied probably within the last 3 weeks. And I know so many people that are having trouble getting unemployment, and they'll sit on the phone all day calling and no one ever picks up. So I mean, the frustration of knowing you have money out there that's supposed to be coming to you and you not being able to access it is crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. Like I said, it's one of those things that, you know, hits close to home. You know, like, again, I want to make it known that it's selfishly because, you know, these places are kind of extra in terms of, you know, what we can afford and, you know, the things that we like to do on our downside, but you know, the families that are being affected is you know, who knows
what do you think about the whole sports thing? I mean, it's just crazy how they're trying to rush back to have games.
The MLB trying to have games in Arizona, and you know, I have a buddy who actually works for the Indians, and you know, I've been kind of in recent contact with him about a job that we're doing for them, but I haven't really asked him about what his thoughts are on it. I'm curious to see what he thinks, because I just don't see
how it can happen either. But it's, you know, the owners want money. You know what I'm saying? They want they don't care about the stands. Yeah. They want that TV money. You know what I'm saying? But to me, it's ludicrous that we're talking about trying to get sports going back again when that's such a minuscule thing to what's going on in the world. You know what I'm saying? I mean, think about it, say MLB wants to kick off their season into Arizona. Every single person that's on the team or involved with the team is going to have to get tested on a very regular basis. So there's a bunch of tests they'll be taken away from you know, just regular citizens that need to get the tests. And then on top of that, you know, say they go to Arizona and they're going to play out there for 10 weeks. Now you're asking a baseball player, A, to put their life on the line because they could catch it. Even if people are getting tested and they're negative, it's still floating around out there somewhere. B, secondly, you expect them to leave their families for 10 weeks? Because you're not going to be able to bring every family with you to Arizona. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, that's a big ask. That's a big ask during quarantine for someone to leave their family for 10 weeks. You know what I mean?
So I agree. It's absolutely
giving ESPN something to talk about, because that was one of the things, you know, I'm a big ESPN person, First Take, pardon the interruption, are kind of my daily shows. And I was wondering, once this hit and they started announcing all the, you know, the sports that were going to be gone, it was like, wow, how's ESPN going to pull this one off? They're going to have to be super creative. You know what I mean? But I'll tell you one thing. I've won a lot of money because a lot of people don't realize that they're showing old games. So, you know, from the 86 Lakers game they had on the Celtics with the championship, I won $50 on that game.
Yeah.
So I've just been trying to bet people.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. DJ Hustle Simmons. Why don't we end this on a positive note? Not to put you on the spot, but give me some words of encouragement.
Well, before I get to the words of encouragement, to let people know, I still do DJ. I do private events and I do weddings. So at DJ Hustle Simmons is where you can hit me up. I don't know. Let's see some strong words. I don't want to use the words that are always being used on TV, because everybody out there kind of says the same thing. But first of all, big shout out to anybody that's out there working and letting our world be as normal as possible at this time, because you know, whether you're working at Walgreens or whether you're working at the hospital, everybody is putting their life on the line by going out there and you know, making it convenient as possible for the people that aren't first responders. You know what I'm saying? I mean, all I can really say is that, you know, we will get through this. I'm not going to feel comfortable until we have a vaccination, or we also have some medication that can turn down the heat of the COVID-19. But pay attention to what people are saying. Pay attention to what's being requested. You know, I'm still seeing a lot of people gathering outside while I'm driving to the store or something like that, kind of close to each other, which is still kind of crazy to me that people aren't taking it serious. But, you know, call people as frequently as possible so you don't go stir crazy. You know, if you live by yourself, it's kind of tough to be quarantined. So make sure you just get a list of people you can call on a daily basis and stuff like that. Oh, funny story real quick before we leave. I was actually driving home from Pino's the other day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I live in West Roxbury, so I drive through Brookline to get to Pino's. And on my way back from Pino's, guess who I saw walking down Lee Street, which is out by the Brookline Country Club? Bob Kraft.
Oh.
Yeah, Robert Kraft was walking with his young girlfriend and another woman. I actually pulled over. Not to be a stalker or harass him, but I pulled over and just said, you know, good looks on the Patriots plane, man, because that was a big move. He didn't have to do that. He didn't have to do that at all. Yeah. So that was a real big move. You know, Bob Kraft does a lot for the city of Brookline, or the town of Brookline, I should say. He does a lot of stuff out there that people aren't aware of him giving back and stuff like that, man. So, you know, if your neighbor needs some help, help him out. Just check on people, man. You know, it's nothing better than someone picking up their phone when it's ringing and seeing a friend calling in this time. Do you know what I mean? Cool.
I hear you, brother. All love.
Sounds love good to me, my man. Thanks for having me on. Continued success. And I'm sure we'll talk on the phone as soon as we finish the podcast.
Yeah, man. Sounds good. DJ Hustle Simmons, that's a wrap. A podcast, A1 Print Shop. Appreciate you coming out. Stay well. Be safe.